And a lot of times as a leader, you have to believe it before others see it. And your belief is what drives them and the direction and the commitment.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Jeremiah Dickey is the Boise State University Athletic Director. Under Dickey's leadership, Boise State has experienced tremendous success on and off the field and court. The Business Development and Revenue Innovation Unit, Broncos United, and the Athletics Master Village are just a few of the many initiatives he has launched during his tenure in Boise. He is a great example of casting vision, working hard, building relationships, and getting things done. Prior to his time at Boise State, he served as the Associate Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics at Baylor University, as well as stops at the University of Houston, University of Akron, and the University of Texas El Paso. Dickey earned a bachelor's degree in sports management from the University of Texas and a master's of sports science and coaching from Akron. On the show, he shares his story, getting into athletics, the importance of relationships, working hard, casting vision, plan the work and work the plan, leadership, making tough decisions, and much more. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Jeremiah Dickey. Jeremiah, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Bailey, for having me on.
Yeah, well, if you wouldn't mind, maybe give our listeners some context to you and your background and kind of what life was like growing up for you.
Yeah, born and raised in El Paso, Texas. You know, my whole family is still back in El Paso, you know, which makes it challenging, you know, with my career but I try to get back as much as possible. And that's foundational for me. You know, it was a great upbringing, very grateful for my parents and I'm the oldest of four. And so, you know, I represent something so much bigger than myself and you can't forget where you come from, but, you know, in terms of athletics, it started at a very young age. You know, grandfather was a team doctor for, UTEP. And so some of my first memories were UTEP basketball and football games, and the seed was planted, and, you know, I'm not an outlier. You know, I had a lot of people help me along the way, ended up going to the University of Texas and graduating and ended up back at UTEP for my first full-time job. And the rest is history, but, it all started in El Paso. And, you know, I'm, you know, it's always, you know, you see it happen a lot, but you can't forget where you come from, you know? And so I'm always reminded, and there are a lot of people back home that they know a lot more about me than most, and they keep me, humbled. So.
Absolutely. It's good to, be humbled sometimes.
That's but right.
Going up into your upbringing, being the oldest of four, were you guys always doing a lot of extracurricular activities, whether it be sports or outside of just playing athletics? And what were those things that you were doing growing up that really shaped you?
Yeah. You know, one, I'm a 80s and 90s kid, right? So we were probably the last generation that still drank from the water hose, and, you know, you didn't worry about much. You know, it was a lot of free play and creativity, and I think that's important. You know, I played sports, and I played soccer and baseball and football and basketball and you name it. And as I got older, you know, I started, you know, to get more into basketball, you know, and part of that was, you know, mainly fear. You know, I was better at basketball, and, you know, but I think it was a good lesson for me, because, you know, at that point, it probably defined who I was as a student athlete. And I was not a student athlete in college, but in, you know, middle school and high school, and it defined who I was, but there were some good lessons for that. You know, one, I'm never going to let this job or anything define me. You know, I know who I am, and this is what I do, but not who I am. And I think that's important. And two, you know, there were some tough lessons in basketball. You know, I'll never forget, in eighth grade, I didn't make the team. But it was kind of the start of the participation trophy, you know, so I got the track suit. I got to sit at the end of the bench, and I was upset. I felt I was better, and it was one of the first adult conversations I had to have in my, and I'm really grateful for my father. He said, "I'm not having it. You go and talk to the coach and you have that conversation." And I went to him and said, "I'm better than X, Y, and Z." And he said, "Prove it." And so every day after practice for a month, I had to play one-on-one against the last guy on the bench because I was the last. So like whoever was next, I had to play him, and I beat every single one of them. And by the end of the season, I actually got a uniform, which was awesome. And I started, and it taught me a lot about myself. It taught me a lot about hard work, and that those are values and foundational for me in terms of how I approach life now. So I'm grateful for it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really glad that you shared that experience because I think sometimes in situations, even when we're so young, maybe eighth grade or whatever it was for you, that's a fundamental time in a kid's life. And so you really can grow through that experience. And
For
obviously
sure.
you had the ability and you also had the parent to be around you to help encourage you to push through those challenging times and to work towards something. So what was it like for you coming out of that experience, and how did it shape your mentality or maybe your confidence and give you the mentality to be able to push and fight through things when you had to face a little bit of adversity or there was a little bit of a challenge that didn't necessarily go the way that you intended or wanted it to go? But how did that maybe shape you to even today and what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I realized at that moment, one, the lesson my dad taught me, like, I'm not going to be there to fight your battles. Not that he didn't love me and he cared for me, but it was one of the greatest lessons that he ever taught me. You have that crucial conversation, and it's on you. And that, followed me through high school. I remember my dad was one of the few parents that didn't show up to practice, and he would stay to the side and he wouldn't talk to the coaches. And it bothered me. I remember talking to my mom and saying, like, why doesn't dad, because you're a kid still, and maturity wise, you're not there. And it's like, you start saying, ridiculous things like, does he not love me? And then, and she told me something I'll never forget. And it still gets me a little emotional. She said, he loves you so much that he's going to let you have success and fail because that's how important you are to him. And he doesn't go to your practices because whatever you get out of this, you will earn. And I'll never forget that, man. And that's something that sticks with me today. And so tying into that eighth grade experience, and I wasn't the most athletic, and there were a lot of, I mean, all these guys were my friends. And so, but it taught me, be competitive, fight for what you believe in. And there's not much that I don't feel that I can, if I put the time, energy, and effort into from a hard work standpoint, because I'm not the smartest guy, but I can guarantee you that I will outwork you. And that's something that it defined everything for me. That is a core piece of who I am. And even today, I'm in the room with a lot of ADs. I'm in the in these meetings on campus, and I guarantee you every single person in there is smarter than me. But I plan the work the plan, and there's not much, if I don't put my mind to it, that I won't be able to accomplish. And that started in that eighth grade experience. And my dad let me go through, those experiences and learned through that. And it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't easy. It hurts sometimes, but it's made me who I am. And I know whether it's as an AD or whatever God has in store for me in the future, I know that I will be able to accomplish it because I will always give 100%.
And I love what your mom told you there about he loves you enough to let you struggle through those things. And I think that's something that is really important for a leader, for a parent, just to be able to let people fail, let people navigate things, let people work through things. Because we want to, as a loving person towards somebody, we want to make sure that they're okay. But for them to grow, we have to let go of the leash and let them go. And I think that is a profound perspective for sure.
For sure. And quite honestly, Bailey, I probably did not appreciate it enough until I became a father myself. And to know how much I love my kids, and to know how much he loves me, my dad, and that how hard it had to be for him. That's powerful. So
Absolutely. Well, and I think Also, too, what you alluded to, just being able to work hard and work the plan, like you said, but just every day, just go after it and outwork the other person. But tying into your kind of maybe high school career, did you want to try to play college athletics, or how did the spark in getting into wanting to be in athletics and maybe even just getting into working in college athletics, how did that even come about for you?
Yeah, it really did. It didn't start in high school. I've always loved sport, I knew like what my limits were, and I wasn't the most athletic person, and so I knew, like, growing up, I was going to Texas. That was bottom line. I grew up in a excuse me, a UT family, and it was Texas or Texas, and I was smart enough to realize, like, I'm not good enough to play at Texas. I wasn't good enough to even sit the bench or be a manager for Texas. Were there potential opportunities playing at NAI schools, and which is nothing wrong with that. But even then, I would have had to work really hard. And I said earlier, 80s, 90s kid. In the 90s is when you really started to see AAU and basketball became full time. It was 24/7. We had fall, spring, summer seasons, and travel, and so by the time I got through high school, quite honestly, I was tired, and I just had kind of lost the love of the game, and that coupled with the fact that I wasn't very, I wasn't going to be good enough, it was that next chapter, and I knew I was going to Texas, but it's interesting, I get to Texas, and you lose that support from your family, and that motherly and fatherly love, and discipline, and I don't have basketball holding me accountable anymore in terms of a coach, and it was all on me, and I let loose, probably inappropriately.
Okay.
I enjoyed Austin, I loved Austin, I enjoyed it, but in return, I wasn't doing very well in school. I changed my major a number of times. I had no idea. I was lost. And I got to a place that I was gonna take a semester off. And we all know what that means. That means I would never go back. And I wasn't thinking that way. And how I was selling it to my family is I'm gonna take a semester off. And it freaked my mom out. And she went into action. And it was something I'll never forget, because they loved me more than I loved myself at that point. And that's something that I'm very grateful for. My mom said, before you do anything, I want you to come home. She happened to be teaching at the school that I went to as a kid, teaching with Mac Rhodes' wife. And I said earlier, I'm not an outlier. Like, these things happen, and I believe from a faith standpoint, it was a God thing. But whatever, luck of the draw, my mom ended up being good friends with Mac Rhodes' wife. And that was my introduction to Mac Rhodes. I believe he was an associate AD. I went back and worked a basketball camp. Long hair and earring. I mean, I was Austined out. Like,
Okay.
so I'm sure, like, what he saw was like, holy hell, like, well, who is this kid? And I remember going to sit down with him, and I just started asking questions, like, why did you, like, tell me about this? Because I was like most fans. I just thought everyone showed up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night for a game. And it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. The band and cheer showed up. And, there's
That's
so much behind the scenes that people don't
it's not what
realize.
you guys do.
Yeah. And so that was the first time, because at that point, ADs, like, you were only in the news for bad things, and so no one ever talked about it. They talked about the head coach, star player. ESPN was huge at that point, so I just had no idea. I asked Mac, like, so tell me what you do. He told me, I think he was over development at that point, and so fundraising. And I said, why'd you choose administration, not coaching? And just it was an unbelievable conversation, because it changed my life. And I left that. And what's interesting is not a lot of people know this, because of my grandfather, the connection to Don Haskins, who's a legend and a Hall of Famer. And obviously grew up in that a family that was very close to him. I met with him that morning for breakfast, and I said, Coach, I'm thinking about getting into coaching. And he said, Jeremiah, I'll call Rick Majerus. Upon graduation, you can be a video coordinator there. And I said, great. And then I went and met with Mac, and he told me about the administration side and why he chose not to be a coach. And for no, there wasn't anything bad. It's just what he wanted out of life. And I remember working the camp. I went back to Texas and I changed my major to sport administration, and the rest is history. I set my goal that I'm going to work in college athletics. Well, at that point, I wasn't sure college athletics or professional, but I was changing my major, and my academics went from just getting by to actually caring. And I ended up getting an internship through my aunt, who also helped me. It was called Longhorn. I think it was Longhorn Network at that time, but the equivalent of a Learfield. And through that relationship, so I got an internship with them. So I was up in the press box during football games and on the court during men's and women's basketball games. And it was this box, and I would control the advertising that spun. And I would keep track of how much time AT&T or whoever got. And then I would go enter it into a spreadsheet and watch film of every time Mac Brown was on TV, how much time did his headset get because there was a sponsor logo on it. And so I got that job. And then through that relationship, they introduced me to Chris Ponsky at the University of Texas, who I think very highly of. She's a great administrator. And she was able to get me an internship within the marketing department at UT. So because of all these people that poured into me and cared about me more than I cared about myself, all of a sudden I had a plan, I had a path, and it saved my life. 'Cause I know that, and this sounds dramatic and I don't mean it to be, but I know if I would have taken that semester off, not only would I not be an AD, that goes without saying, but I'm not sure I'd be alive today because of the direction that I was headed. And that was a lesson for me that, my family was important and they do care about me and that I'm not an outlier. I had a lot of people help me, and it changed my life, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, and going into that story of your perspective when you were at Texas, it sounds like when you had some clarity on a direction to go, you were all in. Have you
Yes.
always kind of had that perspective towards whether it's basketball or finding something that you really want to be doing? Because it's interesting. You might have been kind of wandering a little bit aimlessly, not really knowing what you wanted, but when you found it was just laser focus, it seemed like, at least.
Correct. It's and some of this maybe, today I would say it's probably a little bit inappropriate for me to have thought the way I did at that point, but it gave me direction, like you said. It gave me purpose. At that point I was a rudderless ship. I was doing things I shouldn't be doing. I was partying way too much. God wasn't important to me. So there was no faith component other than I knew right from wrong, and I had no direction, and all of a sudden I had purpose. But the scary piece is it became my identity. And that's a different story in terms of how I lost that. But that was an important time in my life. Now, everything happens for a reason. And I firmly believe that there are no accidents in this life. And is that it was exactly what I needed at that point in time, and ultimately led to some really powerful storms, and in a positive way that changed my life forever as I grew in the industry and set those goals out to, because once I got to graduation, I had decided I could have gone and worked in the ticket office with the Texans, or I can get into college athletics. And I called Mac Rhodes, and he gave me an internship at UTEP, and the rest is history. And so, it all had purpose, but it probably became who I was, and not just what I did, but that's okay. Like, I learned a lot through that.
Absolutely. And I know we definitely want to tie that in here in a little bit, but when you get to UTEP, it's the first job out of college, first, job in athletics out of college. Was it something that you anticipated and expected when you got in it, or was it different in any way than you might have thought before?
The only most of it because I was interning I went from not caring about anything, all of a sudden I wasn't going out on Friday nights because I had to get up early on Saturday for a basketball game. Or so I had started to grow and mature. And, probably the biggest difference was I don't know if people truly understand the time, effort, and commitment, and that goes into being in this industry. You got to really want to work in college athletics. No one gets what they're worth, and I'll never forget an AD telling me, and he was making a lot of money, and at that point my priorities weren't aligned, and so it was probably more about fame and fortune. And I remember him, like, he's making $1 million plus, and I'm like, My goal was to make six figures because my parents really didn't at that point, and to be an AD. And I remember him telling me, Jeremiah, I don't care what they pay me, it will never be worth what I do, you know, and that's why it can't define me. And that was powerful. And it really changed my perspective. So when I was at UTEP, that was the first time that I saw people, you know, you see the media stuff and you know, but I would see that Mac Rhodes was in the office till 10, 11 o'clock at night, and that my team and the team I was on, we were in the office and we were going from volleyball to soccer to football to soccer again to, I mean, it just never ended. It didn't mean we didn't have fun. It didn't mean there, you know, but that personal time, you know, it's truly a commitment that you have to be all in on. And so that was probably the biggest difference for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're at UTEP, you get to go to Akron, Houston, and then Baylor, I believe, correct? What were the things you were learning throughout those experiences at each one of those stops? And maybe what are the things that you really took from the people that you got to work underneath from a leadership perspective? And what were you doing as well in terms of just getting to know more people, learning about leadership, working hard and putting things in place to have each one of those stops, the department that you're in, succeed, and maybe some of those things that you learned.
Yeah, you know, UTEP, I learned the power of relationship. I got to, obviously being from El Paso, I was already somewhat connected. But everything starts with the relationship, and that was important for me. And that became something that is always, you know, to this day is important to me. I don't view donors, I don't view the people I work with just as staff members or as supporters. I view them as friends and colleagues and teammates, and that's a different perspective or mindset, I guess I should say. When I went to Akron, I learned in many ways, because of my own doing, how not to be a leader. At that point in time, I had never really oversaw anyone, and you know, I was probably the youngest, one of the youngest, you know, assistant ADs in the country. And quite honestly, we've done a bad job as an industry, and it's gotten better in pouring into our team, because it's not, I mean, yes, there are certain qualities you're born with, but you know, going from an individual on a team to leading said team, that is a different deal. And it was still me over we, and you know, trying to build your resume and trying to accomplish things because you know, it was my brand and it was my career, and those were, that's challenging, but I learned a lot through that. And you know, that's something that, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, you know, those storms come, as I said, and you know, we did great things at Akron, but then when I went to Houston is really where I learned what it was to be a leader. And it's not to be, you know, it's to really be what everyone else needs you to be. And you know, and how to manage the chaos and the expectations, and to stand in the gap and take the bullets for your team. And when they have success, or when you have success, it's the team's success, it's not yours. And I had to learn that the hard way, you know, and I'll never forget the conversation. I got called into the office, and we were accomplishing everything that, you know, they said, these are the goals, and we accomplished them. But when you get to the end of that, and you look around and no one's with you, I can tell you this, I would rather lose as a team than win as an individual. And that's something that I can deal with losses now. And it provided good perspective, because I probably, unfortunately, and it still bothers me, ran some people out of the business. You know, I wasn't the leader I should have been. I did not pour into my team like I should have. You know, you also realize as a leader, you know, you can't, I guess I had this expectation that everyone needed to be like me, that I was willing to miss Christmas, I was willing to miss Thanksgiving, I was willing to sacrifice, you know, a lot for the sake of my goals and my career aspirations and ambition. And the reality is, no, it takes a, you know, a lot of different people, and you need your worker bees, and you need those that are ambitious, and you know, it's a combination of things. It's, you know, a room full of me is a scary thought, you know, because I needed people around me that were better than me in certain things. I needed to take the blinders off, and I think it humbled me. You know, anytime you get called into the AD's office, And it's Hunter Yurecek, who I love and am very grateful for. And we had a crucial conversation, and it gutted me, because at that point I had held myself to a standard of the accomplishment was worth it. And it changed me. And it at the same time, it changed how I was as a father. I had a young baby at that point, or my wife and I did, and it changed, as you know, how I was as a husband. It became a lot less about me, and it became about everyone else, and that was powerful. And then Baylor, that was really more like I was going there because I needed Power Five experience, and I knew I wanted to be an AD. That was the goal, and so it was box checking. It's like, all right, I loved Houston, had a great time there. I think it was there for 7 years, loved it. Two of my kids were born there, and we go to Baylor, and I thought I was going for this experience, and you know, and I had all the titles and the accomplishment at that point. I just needed to check that Power Five box outside of my internships and undergrad. And what I walked away with was, you know, not just hopefully a better leader and those type of things, but I walked away a stronger, you know, my faith became that much more important to me. I reprioritized my life. You know, God, family, and this job. I knew who I was, and I wasn't going to be defined based on what I did. And so I walked away as a better person. And that was important, because I feel like, you know, and my faith's important. I feel like every step of the way, God was taking me through this process. You know, and I couldn't, and when you're going through it, you don't realize it. But now that I look back, I'm like, wow, like it gives me chills, because everything had purpose. Everything was showing me something about myself that I needed to change, adapt to, whatever. And I think that's important as a leader, because we're never a finished product. This stuff is hard. There's not The job is easy. It's the people, it's the leadership side. That is the challenging part. And with no education or and you're constantly looking at how others do it, you know, that can be really hard. And so I'm so grateful, because there's not a moment in my day that I don't think about something that I learned at UTEP, Akron, Houston, Baylor, you know, and even my first, second, or third year here, now that I've been here three. You know, it's important to me, and it all starts with the leadership piece, and a lot of those lessons learned and those storms I went through has really molded me into the person I am today. And I know the storms coming, because they will, it's guaranteed, is going to make me that much better in the future.
Yeah, and even as you said, going to Baylor, you were thinking about just making sure you could check a box, but you learned so much through that experience that you didn't even anticipate learning. So it's
For
being
sure.
open to those opportunities and always looking and seeking those out as well that enable us to learn and grow at each stop and step along the way. And like you said, I love it. There's no coincidence. As you look back, you can see
Yes.
all the ways that God's worked in your life. Opportunities have come up. People around you've grown from people, had great mentors and bosses that you've worked underneath. And before we get into you stepping into Boise State, who were some people that you looked up to? Obviously, we know there's a couple people you did that you worked with, but who are other people that you looked up to from a leadership perspective, just maybe how they led their life as well? And then also, you got to be around a lot of great coaches in
Yeah.
your time. What are some things you've learned from them as well?
Yeah. Well, first, some people that you know, and some of these people, I don't, they probably don't even know that I watch intentionally what they do and how they live. And but first and foremost, Mac Rhodes, he's family now, and I can't say enough great things about him, and I love him dearly, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for his support and how he poured into me and the things I learned from him. Hunter Yurecek, who I mentioned, is same thing. I got to see someone that, you know, I'll never forget it. He got up in front of the football team, and I never experienced this. And he told them, guys, at this point, his kid was playing for Marshall, and he said, you know, I'm not going to miss my kids' games. And it may upset you today, but 4 years from now, you won't care. But my kid will. And my family's important to me, in summarizing. And it just, that had a profound impact on me, that you can have it all. You know, you don't have to just be a good AD and a terrible father, husband, et cetera. You can have it all. But you got to be honest, and you got to have the crucial conversations, and you got to be intentional, and you know, and you have to make certain sacrifices. And so that was really powerful for me. And you know, and then there's There's some other people that along the way, a Todd Gongwer, who wrote Lead for God's Sake, has become, a great friend and someone, a confidant, and someone I lean on heavily, because from a faith standpoint and just navigating in his business and how he's involved in the industry, and that's been really impactful for me. And and then there's people like my dad, that any problem I'm dealing with, I call him, I just appreciate his advice. And he's been through a lot in life, and he just always provides great perspective. So not all is tied into athletics. I have, some great donors and friends that, I watch what they're doing in their industry and how they lead and handle certain situations, and the grace and humility they show. And so it's I've had a lot of people pour into me, and I'm constantly watching, because unrealistically I want to perfect this, and I know that's probably not possible, but I truly believe that through the support of others and my intentionality and work, that I can be the best Christian father, husband, and athletic director, and that's the goal. In terms of coaches, God, that list is long. And just a couple that jump out, someone like at Baylor, like Matt Rhule, how he lives his life with his family, and how close he is to his kids and his wife, and being a college football coach is not easy. There's a lot coming at him, and I just have the utmost respect for him and appreciation. And it doesn't mean there aren't good, I mean, there's good and bad days, right? Like, coaches are coaches and ADs are ADs, and but seeing how he managed that first year at Baylor was the most difficult year of my career from a work standpoint. Not personal, but work. We were coming in on the back end of everything they were navigating. We were there to fix things, we had I believe a 1-11 season, and it provided such perspective. But to see how that man led every step of the way, and he never lost hope, and it's like, this is part of the plan and the process, and process became so much more important to me. It's like he was doing things that year that he knew was going to maybe not necessarily intentionally hurt us that season, but planting seeds and building that foundation that in year two you would see progress, and then in year three. And so we go from 1-11 to 7-6, and bowl games are bowl games, and I'm at a place 26 straight years, like, you kind of take it for granted. Like, that maybe it was the Texas Bowl when we went after that 1-11 season. I don't know if I've been that emotional, in terms of our staff, and like, because I knew the work that went into it, and how important the team was, and not just what you say, how you live it in action, and how it doesn't happen overnight. Success isn't something that, it just happens. Like, you got to make it happen, and you got to plan the work the plan, and that process. And to see him take us through that, along with Mac Rhodes as the athletic director, they were life lessons after life lessons, and we were it was challenging. It was hard. It was hard. I don't know how else to say it. And at the same time, of I was transitioning my family, I was finishing my master's, like, there were a lot of life things going on, but I'll never forget it. And then in year three, we go to a Sugar Bowl. We lose to Oklahoma twice in the final minutes, and once in the regular season, once in the championship game. I mean, we were this close to doing something that no one even thought possible when we were 1-11. And it just it proved to me that you plan the work the plan, and everything happens for a reason, and it will work out if you're intentional and you commit to the process, and I won't forget that. But that's one thing that really jumps out at me. James Dickey is another one that I really appreciated at the University of Houston, basketball coach, and similar deal, kind of inherited, an uncomfortable situation, and not similar to Baylor, but just it wasn't a great situation, and how he embraced the team and built it up, and created this foundation, and it's obviously, like, there was some success, but ultimately, he retired, resigned, and ended up becoming assistant again, and then Coach Sampson comes in, so going from Coach Dickey, no relation, who just was a good man, how he treated people, how he treated the staff, how he treated the custodians, how he treated me as a young administrator who he didn't owe me anything. He was the head basketball coach. And but I'll never forget that. And then, and then seeing someone like Coach Sampson, I mean, that guy, and you talk about process, he had to fight, claw, scratch for everything. And Houston had the basketball tradition, but he came in, and football's a massive driver in Texas, right? In the state of Texas. And he had to fight that, but he was up for it. Like, he came in, he surrounded himself with people that were in the foxhole with him. And I probably didn't appreciate it enough when I was going through it with him of he fought. And I remember he started this dinner and there was like maybe 30 people that came, and now this thing is like sold out. And I remember when same thing, similar to Coach Rule, of like, there were things he was instilling in that team that first year and then second, and he just kept building. And the level of discipline and commitment to his student athletes and how much he loved and cared for them, and to see it in his son and the rest of the staff. And so it's not an accident. Like, you look at what Houston is today, and now it's like they are a top 10 team, and they are going to go to find more Final Fours, and they're going to win a national championship. And that's a testament to that man and his like belief in what he was doing and why he was doing it. And it was for the right reasons. It wasn't about him. It was about everyone else. And it was about that team. And it gives me chills because now as a fan, I watch what he's doing, and he probably doesn't even know I think this way about him. But it's unbelievable. And if you would have gone back to when we first got to Houston, it was almost unimaginable. Like, there's no way 10, 15, however long it's been, I guess I got there in 2010. There was no way it's like we're gonna get to Final Fours, right? But it starts then, and things worth accomplishing, they don't happen overnight. You gotta be committed and do the work. So long-winded, I apologize,
No,
but
that's all fantastic, and it's all great perspective too, because what an opportunity for you. You're obviously in a department, you get to learn from the people that are around you and the people that are above you, but at the same time, the coaches that you get to be around, you get to watch them establish something that maybe no one has any belief in, but they do. And then they get to go
yes.
out and execute, and they stick to the process. And it's applicable to everybody in our work, in our
No.
business, no matter what it is. You get a firsthand of getting to see that. So I'm glad you got to describe
Sure.
that, which I think ties perfectly into you getting a chance to go and become an AD at Boise State. What was that like for you to ultimately have the opportunity to be at Boise State where you are today? And talk a little bit about maybe just getting to Boise State, because they're not easy. Every decision that you make to move your family, to step into another opportunity, it's not an easy decision. Sometimes
Correct.
there might be a little better, but you're leaving something behind at each stop, and there's opportunity cost to each one. And
For
then when
sure.
you get to become the head AD, there's a lot more decisions that you have to make that are on you, and you have to process all these things. So there's a lot coming at you, but what was it like to get to Boise State, and how has it been for you to be able to establish that? Because you guys are also doing some things that are, big things that you're helping and leading the charge to get people around you to build those friendships and have more people associated with the overall vision of where you guys are going.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I talked about Baylor and how it impacted me. And once again, there are no accidents in this. That December, prior to getting a call, I knew they had made a change, and the rumor was they were gonna, do the search in the spring, and I knew about the brand and whatever else. And so it really wasn't top of mind. And probably this is a lack of confidence in myself, which, ties into a lot of other things, self-talk, and I'm hard on myself. And I probably realized that, like, yeah, that'd be awesome, but there's no way, that that's something for me. At the same time, I was going through that and mentally, I had gotten to a place that the job finally didn't define me, that I knew my purpose was much greater, and that I had gotten comfortable with the idea that there's 131 or two FBS schools now, and there are a lot of great deputy ADs and ADs out there, and that I may never become an AD. And someone who's so goal-oriented, that was initially a hard pill to swallow. That December, I finally gave it to God, and I finally said, all right, I get it. Like, this isn't who I am, it's what I do. And I know my purpose is wherever you have me, and let the doors be open as at your will. And I remember calling our banker because my wife and I were talking about refinancing our house. And I said, hey, like, we're going to refinance. And he said, JD, like, that means you're going to be here longer, or it's not worth it. And I said, yeah, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm comfortable. My family loves it here. And, I'm good with that. And within a week of that call, I got a call on this job. December 26, I was walking with my wife in Illinois, in Moments, Illinois. We had gone up there, driven. We were still navigating COVID and all that nonsense. And I'm like, the search firm called me, and I sent them to voicemail because I was with my wife. And then they called again, and I'm like, they're calling about a coach, and I don't. I told my staff, I'm like, I just need a break, like, I'm drained, like, the season's hard, So when he called again, and I love him, it's Drew Turner. When he called again, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna answer, and he said, JD, what do you think about Boise State? And I said, oh, it's awesome. And what I knew, from the media and everything else. And I had never been to Boise. I'd never been to Idaho. And he said, well, they're interested in you. They want you to interview. And I'm like, okay. And I said, when? He says, potentially within the next 24 to 48 hours. And I'm like, I'm in Illinois. It's snowing. It's cold. Like, my wife's with me, and she's only hearing half the conversation. So I'm like, all right, sounds good. I'll interview. And she's like, what was that? And I said, well, it sounds like Boise State's interested. And I said, and at that point, like, I never, which is non-traditional. Like, one, they were going to do it on Zoom. Two, I'd never been to this place, and they weren't going to fly me in. And three, I had never interviewed for an AD job. I had only applied, I'd gotten calls before, but it just didn't feel right. And I had only applied for one because of a search firm had asked me to apply for it. But I never had an interview. And so there was a lot of fear. And so on top of the uncomfortableness of doing it on Zoom. And so I'm in my mother-in-law's office, and I'm wearing my father-in-law's tie. And I always would bring a sport coat because I never knew, like, if I'd go see Northwestern or, because you're trying to network and whatever. And try to get better, see their facilities. And so I ended up getting an hour interview. I think that was a Saturday. I ended up interviewing Tuesday, so a little over 48 hours. And then I didn't hear anything. And I was so upset because I didn't feel I did a good job. And I knew I didn't. It was challenging. You have all these people on the call. Some people are disinterested. You could tell. Like, so I just felt like I had this opportunity and I missed it. And like I said, I'm hard on myself. And I called my dad, and he said, one, your steps are already determined. Your job is to walk through the doors that are open and let his will be done. He has you. And if this is meant to be, it's going to happen. And if it's not, it's not going to happen. And you need to be prepared for both. And you need to accept that this is what it is. And it, once again, my dad, like, brings this support that I'm like, thank you. So then I'm kind of fine. And I haven't heard from him. This is a Tuesday. We get to Friday, and it's December 31st at that point. And I get a call at 7 a.m. from the search firm. Hey, the president wants to talk to you. And I'm like freaking out because I kind of mentally, like, all right, it's not going to happen. And I ended up jumping on a call with her, another hour interview, and they called me back within an hour and said, JD, I think you're going to get this job. You need to start wrapping your head around moving, and because it was happening so fast. And I told my wife, like, I think we're going to get this. And I spent the rest of the afternoon negotiating and calling mentors and just making sure it was the right fit. So very long-winded, but the process was important to me, and it was very non-traditional, and ultimately accepted that job that night. And then I had to go out and hire a football coach. And in that same semester, I had to move a family. I had to navigate COVID. I had to navigate, one of the first calls I got as the AD was conference realignment. And from the American, and talking to them, and so I was drinking from a fire hose. And then I had to hire a women's golf coach, and I had to hire a softball coach. So, like,
Welcome.
there's, yeah, welcome, and everything got thrown. Then all of a sudden, NIL and transfer portal, but at the same time, I should back up and say, like, when I got, I mean, prior to getting the job and when I got the job, I had made some calls to some people within the industry, and I couldn't, like, everyone was so consistent. Like, they had talked to each other of JD, like, I can't tell you a better place to live, to raise a family, how important, and that was super important to me. And at this point, I have 3 kids and a wife, and they loved Waco. And so I accepted, but then, you hit the ground running and reality sets in, and the questions I wasn't able to ask, now all of a sudden I'm looking at budgets and I'm looking at, at the facilities and it just, I'm so grateful for my path because there were so many similarities to UTEP, to Akron, to Houston, and even to Baylor. And I could lean on that. And, it's like athletics department 101. There were a lot of things that were low-hanging fruit to me because of those experiences, because of leaders like Bob Stoll at UTEP and Hunter Yurecek and Tom Wistersill and Mac Rhodes and all these ADs that I had worked under over the course of time. And so we talk about plan the work, work the plan. And that's when it started. And one of the biggest things was to open us up and myself to Bronco Nation. And to be what they, not just what my team needed, but what they needed me to be. And that started the storytelling, and a lot of times as a leader, you have to believe it before others see it. And your belief is what drives them and the direction and the commitment. And there were a lot of people early on that you can't do that. That's not going to happen. And Bailey, one of my lesser qualities, as my wife would say, or, I'm extremely stubborn. And if you tell me I can't do it, then I'm going to work that much harder to prove you wrong. And so I took it all in, and we started, to put our team together and create the infrastructure. And similar to what I learned under a Coach Sampson or a Coach Rule of, you're not going to see the fruits of our labor for a while, but you will see it. And that first year, it's like, this is how we're going to set up the department. And we're going to start externally. And then we're going to move internally. And then we're going to do this. And then we're going to do that. And you just keep chopping wood. You just keep moving through. And it's not fun, and it's uncomfortable. And it's, as a leader, you impact people, and you have to know that going in. And not everyone was going to, everyone had an opportunity for a seat on the bus, but not everyone was going to take it. And it was really challenging. But 3 years in, I look at what we've been able to accomplish, and it's not me, it's we. I define the direction, but I had to surround myself with unbelievable staff, and I would put our team up against anyone in the country. Power five, it doesn't matter. Like, these guys, girls, they grind, and they're in it for the right reasons. And for the first time this semester, it's like, we are a team. Everyone's in it for the right reasons. They know what their why is. They know what we're at set out to, what we set out to do and to accomplish. And it doesn't mean the storms don't come. I had to go a different direction from a coach. That's going to happen, but that's leadership. And your job is to make those decisions, set your team up for success. They get the success. And if there's failure, I'm going to take it. And it really, I'm really proud of what we've been able to do for 3 years.
Yeah, and I love that you touched on all those stories, but I think it goes back even to your days at Texas. The willingness to be able to sit there and watch and make sure and write down how many seconds one of the advertisements was. It's all those little things that compound. You talked about chopping wood. Those are the things that you're doing every single day that enable you to have the opportunity to become the eventual AD at Boise State, right?
For
And
sure.
I'm sure I don't want to highlight over this because in all those spots that you worked, you were probably doing above and beyond what was asked of you to do because that was probably your mindset, your nature. And I think that's really important for people to understand. If they have a goal, they want to get somewhere, you have to be willing to serve other people. Like you said, you had that paradigm shift, but at the same time, you got to work and you got to do more than what someone else is doing to have the opportunities in front of you to go do that. And even when you have the opportunities, I was writing it down, the self-doubt that you might have had in that moment. Everyone deals with that. No matter if you're the president of the United States or someone who's just getting their first job, we all deal with that. And it's easy for us to look at other people and see the good qualities, like, hey, why do you deal with that? Because you have what it takes. But sometimes that belief in ourselves is really important that we have to have that confidence. And I think that's why what you talked about relationships, having those people around you, just like your dad, the story of your dad's awesome. to lift you up, to encourage you, and to give you some refocus on what's important. So
Correct.
I think everything you just talked about is great, but I do want to touch on, you talked about having to make some tough decisions. And whenever you have to do that, you know, people can look at the position and the job and think, oh man, that's a great position to be in. But you have to make hard decisions. You have to be in the spotlight for uncomfortable things you don't necessarily always want to do, but that's part of the thing that you have to do. But you had had an article or had mentioned you had a decision to make that was tough, but your head, heart, and gut aligned. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you just talked about. If you wouldn't mind, when you make decisions, what do you mean by head, heart, and gut aligned?
Yeah. One, I've said my faith's important to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's my heart, you know, that's, it starts there, you know, and the head is, you know, it's the data, you know, it's thinking through the process. It's making sure you don't have blinders. It's doing, you know, doing your due diligence and, you know, you're impacting people's lives. And not just that individual, it's the people under them. It's their families. It's their families' families. I mean, it's, you can't take it for granted. You know, I have the ability, you know, to impact, you know, like I think about myself and moving my family. And fortunately I had that choice, but we know how this industry is. It, you know, I could get terminated at any point. And so that always weighs on me. So, you know, I want to make sure that it's not just like the faith piece. It's also the data and me thinking through the process and risk reward and, you know, and constantly processing and strategizing. And we're never, and, you know, if I approach everything, we're never a finished product and I'm looking at others the same way. And then also like my ownership in it, you know, me going a different direction from anyone on our team or having to make a tough decision. As the leader, I have ownership in that. If there is enough, whether it's failure or whatever it is that I have to make a decision or that we get to that place to have an uncomfortable, crucial conversation, you know, that's on me. It's not just on that person. I failed. I wasn't what they needed me to be. I didn't do what I needed to do. And so the gut piece is, it's just that a combination of the data and the heart. It's just that feeling. It's like what I'm learning as a leader is nothing is 100%. Nothing. And maybe if I can get to 60%, like I feel good about this, that's enough.
Uh-huh.
And every decision is under a magnifying glass. So it may look good today, tomorrow you're being judged for it. You know, today's solutions are tomorrow's problems. Like, so I realized that, you know, that's the responsibility of being a leader. I realized that no matter what I do, my words have power, my decisions impact lives, and I never have 100% guarantee. Like, that's hard, but that is leadership. And to be willing to make decisions is important. And not, you want to overthink in an appropriate way, but, you know, like I'm big on movement, you know, and because movement allows you to pivot, you know, by standing still and living in sanity, which is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, at some point that is on you as well. And so I would rather take the risk and make the decisions and take all the data and all the feelings and all the faith and everything that goes into it. And as long as I'm doing it, not for me, but we, which we is a lot here, you know, we are the professional team in this state. I represent something so much bigger than just this department. And that's something that weighs heavily on me. I'm not going to lie. Like that's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility. At the same time, as my wife reminds me, no one's making me do this, right? No one's making me, I'm choosing to do this. You know, and so when I talk about head, heart, and gut, it's all of the above. It's everything that goes into a decision. I'm not going to, you know, shoot from the hip. I'm going to be very calculated and strategic and intentional with every decision. And some are bigger and smaller, and some I can delegate because it's like, you know, which is also part of being a leader. Like I know what I would do, but this is a good learning experience. And you guys want to go left, I want to go right, go left. And let me know how I can help. And guess what? When left has success, you get it. And when left doesn't work, I'm still going to take that responsibility from you in a positive way, not take it, but I'm going to take responsible. I'll be responsible for whatever that failure is. And that's the trust you have to have in your team. And that's the empowerment and you that you have to give, because it starts with you. And so that's what all that meant.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of genius in it, and I wish we had more time, but in order to honor your time, I want to wind down. Just a few quick questions for you. One, first and foremost, you've already talked about your faith and how that really impacts your decision and the way you live and everything, but what does it mean to be a great husband and father, in your opinion?
I have to make them a priority. It's very easy to get caught up in this office. It's very easy to, I mean, it never ends. The phone's never off. It's constant. 2 a.m. in the morning, you get calls, 6 a.m. I mean, it's always there. I have to be very intentional in prioritizing my wife first and foremost, and my kids. And so you make, I make deals. I'm not, I schedule my wife. And she didn't like it early on. She likes it now, because my schedule's crazy. And but I know that there's going to be time to connect. I know I'm better earlier in the day than I am later in the day, because I just talk a lot. And so 10,000 plus words, by the time I get home, I'm drained. I don't miss, if I'm in town, I don't miss my kids' games. And so my team knows, and they help me with it, that if there's a donor event but my kid's playing basketball, I'm going to go to the basketball game. And and it requires more work on my end then, because then I have to follow up with said donors. And but prioritize. I do believe you can have it all, and I don't want to get to a place that my kids don't know me. And I think there's a lot of value in what I do, and the responsibilities I have as a lesson to them. And I get to talk. I mean, it sounds, I know your kids shouldn't be your best friends, but I don't have time for a lot of hobbies. Like, I love this job. I'm passionate about it, but I love of my faith and my wife and my family, and that becomes my core group. And so if I'm not working, I'm with them, and it's because I have to be so much more intentional. And I've learned that along the way. I didn't start off that way, and had to learn some hard lessons in terms of connecting with my wife and my kids.
I think that's great advice. Well, the final question I have for you, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
That's a good question, man. You're gonna stump me at the end.
Well, you've summed up a lot of good stuff already, so.
Building excellence is action. As I said before, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to do it. And that requires a tremendous amount of commitment and dedication and discipline. And so that's what excellence is to me. And there are no guarantees. Everything starts with that goal in mind. But you also have that willingness to change. And I think that ties into being excellent.
Absolutely. Well, Jeremiah, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing a little of your story. I wish we had more time. There's a lot more things that you could have shared, but thank you again for coming on, and we'll tie in some of the links to Boise State, and if people wanted to find out more about what you guys have going on and the different sports teams and all the success you guys have had, we'll tie that in there. So thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Bailey. I appreciate it.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.